than to be fascinating. These are the great truths of modern life, which Huey Erskine never realized. Poor Huey. Intellectually, we must admit, he was not of much importance. He never said a brilliant or even an ill-natured thing in his life. But then he was wonderfully good-looking, with his crisp brown hair, his clear-cut profile, and his gray eyes. He was as popular with the men as he was with the women, and he had every accomplishment except that of making money. His father had bequeathed him his cavalry sword and a history of the Peninsular War in 15 volumes. Huey hung the first over his looking glass and put the second on a shelf between Ruff's Guide and Bailey's Magazine, and lived on 200 a year that an old aunt allowed him. He had tried everything. He had gone on the stock exchange for 6 months. But what was a butterfly to do among bulls and bears? He had been a tea merchant for a little longer, but had soon tired of Picoy and Sochong. Then he had tried selling dry sherry. That did not answer. The sherry was a little too dry. Ultimately, he became nothing. A delightful, ineffectual young man, with a perfect profile and no profession. To make matters worse, he was in love. The girl he loved was Laura Merton, the daughter of a retired colonel who had lost his temper and his digestion in India and had never found either of them again. Laura adored him, and he was ready to kiss her shoestrings. They were the handsomest couple in London and had not a penny piece between them. The colonel was very fond of Huey, but would not hear of any engagement.
"Come to me, my boy, when you have got 10,000 pounds of your own, and we will see about it," he used to say.
And Huey looked very glum in those days, and had to go to Laura for consolation. One morning, as he was on his way to Holland Park, where the Mertons lived, he dropped in to see a great friend of his, Alan Trevor. Trevor was a painter. Indeed, few people escape that nowadays, but he was also an artist, and artists are rather rare. Personally, he was a strange, rough fellow, with a freckled face and a red, ragged beard. However, when he took up the brush, he was a real master, and his pictures were eagerly sought after. He had been very much attracted by Huey at first, it must be acknowledged, entirely on account of his personal charm.
"The only people a painter should know," he used to say, "are people who are bête and beautiful, people who are an artistic pleasure to look at and an intellectual repose to talk to. Men who are dandies and women who are darlings rule the world. At least they should do so."
However, after he got to know Huey better, he liked him quite as much for his bright, buoyant spirits and his generous, reckless nature, and had given him the permanent entree to his studio. When Huey came in, he found Trevor putting the finishing touches to a wonderful life-size picture of a beggar man. The beggar himself was standing on a raised platform in a corner of the studio. He was a wizened old man, with a face like wrinkled parchment, and a most piteous expression. Over his shoulders was flung a coarse brown cloak, all tears and tatters. His thick boots were patched and cobbled, and with one hand he leant on a rough stick, while with the other he held out his battered hat for alms.
"What an amazing model," whispered Huey as he shook hands with his friend.
"An amazing model?" shouted Trevor at the top of his voice. "I should think so. Such beggars as he are not to be met with every day. A Trouvaille, mon cher, a living Velasquez. My stars, what an etching Rembrandt would have made of him."
"Poor chap," said Huey. "How miserable he looks. But I suppose, to you painters, his face is his fortune."
"Certainly," replied Trevor. "You don't want a beggar to look happy, do you?"
"How much does a model get for sitting?" asked Huey, as he found himself a comfortable seat on a divan.
"A shilling an hour."
"And how much do you get for your picture, Alan?"
"Oh, for this I get 2,000 pounds?